And in Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 1, it says, when the son of David was king in Jerusalem, he was known to be very wise. And he said, nothing makes sense. Everything is nonsense. I've seen it all. Nothing makes sense. Now, if I paid my money, paid my $25 to hear Warren Buffett, and he told me that nothing makes sense in the world, you know what I'm going to do, don't you? I want my $25 back, because I could listen to the goofiest guy there is tell me that nothing makes sense in this world, and I knew that before I went. Nothing makes sense. This world is crazy. And, I didn't need Warren Buffett to tell me that nothing makes sense in the world. I came here for answers, not questions. So, that just wouldn't do at all. But what does Solomon say? Vanity. Some translations say meaningless. Life has no meaning. And that's what mankind from the time of Solomon to now has been saying. Life has no meaning. That's what people that have been taking their lives have been saying. Life has no meaning. Life is not worth living. They have terminated their life because they have no meaning in their life. And so they have taken it. And so they've ended their life. I've got a feeling there'd be a lot of others that would be in the same situation. They would say, I want my money back. I came here for answers, not questions. And you're telling me life has no meaning? I came here because I need something to hold on to. And you're telling me vanity. Vanity of all vanities, meaningless. I know it has no meaning. This is the last thing I have come to. There would probably be people in the audience that have the feeling that this is the last straw. I've given up on everything, and this is the last thing I've listened to before I take my life. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and verse 4, especially if Solomon said, or whoever we're listening to said, stay with me a little longer, we'll get to some answers. I want you to first know that I came up with the conclusion that life does have no meaning, but I'll give you some answers. Chapter 2 and verse 4, he says, I tried some great things, or I did some great things. I built houses. I planted vineyards. I had flower gardens and orchards full of fruit trees. I had pools where I could get water for the trees. I owned slaves, and their sons and daughters became my slaves. I had more sheep and goats than anyone who had ever lived in Jerusalem. Foreign rulers brought me silver, gold, and precious treasures. Men and women sang for me, and I had many wives who gave me great pleasure. I was the most famous person who had ever lived in Jerusalem, and I was very wise. I got whatever I wanted and did whatever made me happy. But most of all, I enjoyed my work. Now, notice that last verse there. He says, I got whatever I wanted. Do you get whatever you want? No, I doubt it. I doubt it. The New International, I looked at several different translations, and the New International Version says, denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. The first phrase, though, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. We don't have the ability to deny ourselves nothing our eyes desire. But could you imagine that if you had the ability to do it? This was the guy that was looking for meaning in life, and he said, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. Think of the things that you desire in your life. You see it, you get it. Can you imagine that? You ladies, you go to Dillard's, you shop for clothes. You know, you guys, you go, you get it. If you need a tie, you go, you get it, you're done. Like that, isn't it? It's not shopping. It's a quest. You go, you get it, you're done. You need a shirt, you go, you get it, you're done. It's 10 minutes. That's it. Ladies, it's an adventure. It is. It is. I've been shopping with my wife before. You don't go and you get things. You look. You don't go and get a shirt for work. You look. Pennies, Dillard's, any place else that has a shirt. It's an adventure. It's a safari. You know what I mean. But this says you look, you if you desire it, you get it. Scott, we go to the Harley place, those CVO Harleys. Wrap them up, buddy. $40,000 a pop, man. We'll take everyone we see that we like, whatever our eyes desire. We get it. We'll go get us a couple Lambos, a Ferrari or two, you know. I mean, this was Solomon. This was this guy. And he's looking for whatever makes him happy. And he sees this stuff and he says, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. That's what he's saying. He did it. He tried it out. He's going to see if that's the kind of stuff that made him happy. Can you imagine that? Solomon says, nah, didn't make him happy. So no matter how much you ladies shop, it will not bring you happiness. And don't take Solomon's word just because he's a guy. He tried it though. It says, no, it's not going to bring you happiness. Then he tries money. And Solomon says in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 10, and I really like the way the NIV puts it, whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with income. The antithesis to this is whoever does not love money always has enough, and whoever does not love wealth is always satisfied with their income. That's what he's saying. I've always remembered the words of Jack Exum, the famous Church of Christ preacher. I was a little kid when he came to College Terrace, which was, I guess, now West Ark, and we're going to slide this off. He came to West Ark, and one of the things he said at the time, and I've remembered it to this day, and I've quoted it to myself ever so often, is that we spend money we don't have to buy things we don't need to keep up with people we don't even like. Have you heard that before? I don't know if Jack Exum wrote it or not, but he said it, and I remembered it, and I just think that's so wise. We spend money we don't have to buy things we don't need to keep up with people we don't even like. How wise is that? That's the worth the price of admission alone if you remember those things. I found out a long time ago that, you know, when it comes to money, you have these pictures of this, just paper, with these pictures of politicians. And if you take those, you can trade those for things that you need. It's just money. It's just money. So, it's something to remember. And Solomon teaches us that very thing. And he teaches us that people use it as status symbols. Don't worship the money. And people talk about the worshiping money in the field of other things and worldly things. And we talk about the science and mathematics and things like that. That's some of the things that Solomon explored in his day. And one of the illustrations that has to do with some of that is, I was asked one time recently if man has the ability to ever develop life. Does that disprove the existence of God? Have you thought about that? How many years has it been since life has been created? And man has been trying to come up with ways to prove that God does or does not exist. If we ever get to the point where we can duplicate God's actions, all that does is prove that God does exist. And because it took intelligent life to bring life into existence, And that proves that it took intelligent life to create the universe. It took us how many years to duplicate God's actions that he created like that? Also along those lines, recently I had a bad habit. And this goes along with an earlier illustration I used in one of our classes. I had a bad habit when a watch would quit working. I'd throw it in a drawer. Remember our illustration of the watches? Well, I didn't tell you the whole story. I threw them in a drawer. And I would buy another watch. And when it would quit working, instead of going to get another battery, I'd just throw it in the drawer and buy another watch. Well, here recently, just before we moved to town, I was embarrassed to tell anybody. I had all these watches that wouldn't work. And I thought, you know, I need to buy a few batteries. So I bought this tool where you could take the back off. And this was just before we moved to town. So I took the backs off and I started writing down watch battery numbers and things like that. So I got some baggies and I put all the watches back in the baggies along with the battery that I had taken out and sealed it back along with the battery that was bad because I wasn't sure which watches I wanted to make run again. So I put them all in the bag, put them back in the drawer, had all this stuff written down. And then when they move you, they take this plastic and they wrap all the way around all your drawers and things like that anymore, your chest of drawers and stuff. And they just leave all your junk in there. And they just throw it on the truck. And I think they shake it up on the way to town. And shake it real good. But then they get it to town, and you don't have to take your stuff out. It's really nice because you don't take your junk out. And I'm really messy. I'm really messy. And anyway, they get it to town. They unwrap it. So I buy some of these batteries, and I go back to put some batteries in these watches. And the watch was still assembled. But the watch and the battery, not a single one of them did the battery go back into the watch. And that just further proves that I wondered how long it would take, if I shook that bag, how long it would take for that battery to get back in there. Because the cheap watches, you start trying to put that battery in there, you can imagine me trying to put that battery into the cheap watches, some of those watches went in the trash. Now some of the watches that I paid a little bit more, like this is a Hurley watch, it's a Bulova, it's not expensive, but it's a little more expensive than a Timex. The battery just went right into that watch when I started putting it in. It didn't go in by itself, but it went in a little better than the cheap stuff that went in the trash that broke the watch. And the point being the fact that it was designed to do that. But it didn't do it on its own. It had to have somebody help it out just a little bit. And the point of all that being is that technology needs the intelligence of God and God controlling all that, and the riches will not buy the happiness. You got to go buy a watch battery. That's what that means. Another point. Ecclesiastes 10 verse 1. Now this one, as I read this, I had to study on this a little bit. Now this is from the Contemporary English Version. It says, "A few dead flies in perfume make all of it stink, and a little foolishness outweighs a lot of wisdom." Now when I read that in the Contemporary English Version, I was a little confused. A few dead flies in perfume make all of it stink, and a little foolishness outweighs a lot of wisdom. And I thought, read a few commentaries. I don't buy a lot of perfume. But I got to thinking, well, I wonder what is the most expensive perfume that you can buy. Y'all know? Does anybody know? I did a little checking. And thankfully, today you will leave here with the knowledge of the most expensive perfume in the world. If you don't already know. So listen close. Clive Christian is the most expensive perfume in the world, and you can buy 1.6 ounces on eBay for $215.99. Did you know that? That's important information. How much is 1.6 ounces? This much? Is that right? 1.6 ounces is not much, is it? Y'all show me. Somebody that knows how much 1.6 ounces is, hold your fingers up. Is that right, Larry? You don't know 1.6 ounces? It's not much perfume, is it? But Clive Christian, 1.6 ounces, $215. Oh, and 99 cents. Oh, I forgot to mention, free shipping. Free shipping. Ecclesiastes 10:1. A few dead flies in perfume make all of it stink, and a little foolishness outweighs a lot of wisdom. Okay, I wondered, we've got the most expensive perfume. How much would that be worth if you got it in the mail, if you ordered that stuff, and you looked at this $215 perfume, and it had dead flies in it? You ever order anything off eBay, and you got it, and it just really wasn't what you wanted? Well, if you ordered $215 perfume at 1.6 ounces, and you got it, and you held it up to the light, and you said, I think I got some dead flies in there. Would you give them a good rating on eBay? I'm thinking I might say, you know, I'm really not pleased with my purchase. I'm not going to give this seller a good rating. They're not getting all, you know, those stars you give them on eBay when you buy something. They're not getting a good rating. I'm sorry. Now, what does that mean? You got flies in your perfume. What's Solomon trying to say? Here you've got a life given to you from the Lord, and you're living your life, and you got a few flies in it. That's what he's trying to say. Don't take this precious ointment that God has given you and put them stinking putrefied flies in your perfume. A few, and some of your translations will say a few rancid flies will ruin precious ointment. That's what several of your translations will say. God has given you a precious life, but yet we will turn around and put terrible things in our lives and ruin what God has given us. And that's, I think, what Solomon's trying to get across. And we'll ruin something precious that God has given us. And then chapter 12, the bookends of life. That's what I call the bookends of life. He starts chapter 12 with the young person. He ends chapter 12 with the old person. There's something in it for everybody, young and old and everybody in between. Chapter 12, verse 1, he says, remember now your Creator. He didn't say remember later. He says remember now your Creator. When? In the days of your youth. Why? He says before the difficult days come. I'm going to tell you, things are hard now. They ain't going to get easy later. As you get older, they're going to get harder. How many of you at 20 had things harder than you do it? We look back when we think that things were hard then and easy now. No. There may have been some sickness or things like that that maybe we've overcome, but life gets harder. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come and the days draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. We are creatures of habit. We develop habits through things that we do. There is no such thing as saying, you know, when I get older, I'm going to follow the Lord. No, you won't. If you ain't doing it now, you ain't going to do it then. There's no such thing as putting things off. You will develop habits in the things that you do. If you don't practice good habits now, it's going to be harder later on. Anything that you do now is going to become easier the more you practice. You develop reflexes for that particular activity. And if you don't serve the Lord now and develop good habits as you get older, it will become harder and harder and harder, because it will become easier to fall into those patterns of behavior as you get older. He also goes on to say, when all has been heard, the conclusion of the matter is, fear God and keep His commandments. Because this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every act to judgment, including every hidden thing, whether good or evil. You knew we were building up to that. That's no secret. That's been in Ecclesiastes. You've read that before. And you know, when the day of judgment comes, you will be so pleased for every good thing that you have done. If you have need to respond to the invitation, we offer it to you this morning as we stand in.